for the second week in a row, we're going to read a parsha that is largely about tzara'at, right? So parsha's Metzora. The Masechta of Mishnayos that one would learn if one wanted to learn about tzara'at, of course, is Masechta's Nega'im. So if you ever learn Masechta's Nega'im really well, right, that probably means you've also learned the rest of Shas really well too, because normally Masechta's Nega'im is reserved for those who came too late to sign up for the Shloshim. If you were there in time, right, if you were there in time, you wouldn't end up with Masechta's Nega'im. When Rav Aaron Cutler, his Zichron Levracha, tried to describe the greatness of the Chazon Ish, he pointed to the Chazon Ish on Masechta's Nega'im, not any particular brilliant insight that the Chazon Ish had on Masechta's Nega'im, but the fact that the Chazon Ish on Masechta's Nega'im exists. Meaning the Chazon Ish learned Masechta's Nega'im, and his Sefer Masechta's Nega'im is no different than his comments on Masechta's Bava Kama. Meaning it's that points to the greatness of the man. The details of the procedure for Metzora can therefore obviously be confusing, can be somewhat nuanced, and it gives fodder for the Chazon Ish to be able to write a whole sefer on it, meaning there is such a thing as learning Masechta's Nega'im bi'iyun. But even just on the simplest, the most cursory level, the most basic level, just reading through the Pesukim, what happens, how we treat a Metzora, the whole idea of the process of a Metzora also points to certain anomalies in the way that we deal with this particular type of tumah as opposed to other forms of tumah. First of all, I'm not aware of a single other form of tumah where a total quarantine is required. Of course, we have tumah that you have to go outside of the machna shechina, outside of the machna leviyah, but chutz l'gimul machnos, where you're totally removed from society, no other tumah. Not Tumas Meis, not Tumas Ziva, no other Tumas sends you Chutz L'Gimel Machnos. And it doesn't seem that it's because it's contagious. I don't think we have any record of Tzara'as being a contagious disease, right? It's not, I'm sure if it were, there would be people telling you not to get vaccinated for it, but I don't think we have anyone that says that it's a contagious disease, and still we totally quarantine the person, we send them michutz l'machna. Second, and paradoxically, during Yemei Chaluto are the days when he's definitely declared absolutely tameh, marital intimacy becomes mutter. Meaning during the Yemei Sipuro, where we're not sure yet, and we just have to count the days and see what happens, and play it out, and see if the nega expands or stays the same or shrinks or whatever, and whether white hairs grow, and all the details. So he's also b'tashmi shamita. Yemei chaluto, he's tamei. Ah, now he's mutter b'tashmi shamita. Also highly unusual. You would imagine that that's more chumra than the intermediate state. Third anomaly: in order to become tahar, he has to have an aguda, a binding of cedar bark and hyssop with red wool, an aguda. There's a notion of eged elsewhere in halacha. We have the concept of eged of alula, right? So but the Gemara says eged of alula. The Gemara's conclusion is alula vein tzarich eged. We only do eged mishum hidur mitzvah. So it's not a total anomaly. The idea of eged by a mitzora. We also have by where else do we have? By Pesach Mitzrayim, by Paraduma, right? So you do have this notion of an eged, but it's still highly unusual that this is what the Mitzora requires. And finally, just like the Avodas Yom HaKippurim involves taking two identical animals, one to be shechted, the other to be sent away, less famous is that the Taras HaMitzora also involves such a similar procedure. Two identical animals, one to be slaughtered, one to be sent away, but this time it's not goats, it's birds. So why the birds? Why the birds and dafka this unusual treatment of the birds? In last week's parsha, the Torah tells us of a mitzvah that we already know about, and it is totally out of context, right? We already know about the mitzvah of Bris Milah from Sefer Bereishis. In last week's parsha, right in the middle of the discussion of the laws in Tumat Arav Yoledes, we're told of the birth of a baby boy, Yom HaShemini Yimol B'Tzar Alaso, to give the baby a bris, followed by all the laws of Mitzvah. So why is that mitzvah specifically taught in that context? So I think there's one basic yesod over here relating to the Mitzvah. All of the halachos of the Mitzvah seem to point in a single direction. Chazal are teaching us that he is afflicted with this ailment because he is socially destructive, right? That's what the Gemara in Arachin tells us. It's because of the sin of Lashon Hara that he earned this tzara'as. He's a socially destructive personality. He's a Baal Lashon Hara. He doesn't know how to properly interact with other people. Instead of deflecting attention to give credit to other people, which is the proper way to act, to not try to look for credit for yourself and inflate yourself, but rather to try to give credit to others and to try to honor and respect other people, he inflates his own self-worth and his own self-image by speaking ill of others, putting someone else down. We spoke about that last week, in order to elevate himself. Instead of using the power of a community, the power of social interactions to help others, he uses it to destroy people, to gang up on other people, right? The Baal Lashon Hara needs a partner. He needs someone who's going to listen to him in order to pick on the little guy, in order to pick on the person who he wants to put back in his place. And on the very simplest level, the person who has no sense of community, the person who has no sense of responsibility for others, no sense of selflessness, doesn't belong among the Jewish people. The Metzora quarantined. Chutz mi gemel machnos, not as a punishment, but as a consequence. I mean, it's exactly that he is now sleeping in the bed that he made for himself. He decided that he wants to remove himself from proper social interactions, so we just take it to the next step. You are removed from social interactions. Not because he's contagious, but because he wants to be contagious. He wants to create this division within Klal Yisrael. And that's why we have to send him out. Being together means to connect with a smile, a handshake, a hug when appropriate. That's not what this person does. You know, a young Rav once came to Rav Steinman asking if he should accept an offer to be a Reish Kollel in a far-flung community somewhere. So Rav Steinman asked, well, does your wife have family, friends in that community? Does she have anyone to socialize with in that community? So the rabbi took out his phone. I assume it wasn't a smartphone. I don't know if he had that kind of chutzpah. But he took out his phone and he said, you know, hello, we have these. She can always talk to whatever friends there. Push of a button and she could talk to her friends and family. So what difference does it make if she has people there? So Rav Steinman said, I have a shayla, the halacha. Can a mitzora talk on the phone? Is a person of tzaras? He's outside of. Is he allowed to talk on the phone? So the young Talmud Chacham, he says, yeah, there's no halacha that he's not allowed to talk on the phone. So Rav Steinman said, exactly. Interactions on the phone are not the same as an interaction in person. She can have a phone and still be quite lonely. Make sure that she's 100% in agreement and ready to go before you make a decision to take her away from all of her friends and take her away from all of her family. The phone is not the same. A personal interaction, same, and something that we're losing a lot in our generation. Even in the secular world, they are lamenting the way that people interact in our generation. You know, I'm participating in some sort of panel discussion relating to Shiduchim in a couple of weeks from now. So they sent me a sneak peek of the questions that we're going to be dealing with. I don't know anything about Shiduchim, so I don't have kids in the parasha. I don't know. I just talk to you guys sometimes, and you tell me that. But I don't really know anything. But I figured I'll just be on the panel and listen to what Mrs. Kamenetsky has to say. She's you know, so she knows a lot. But whatever. They put me on this panel. So one of the questions was, what do you have to say about the practice that a lot of young men, and it says in parentheses, even good boys, will go to pick up a girl from a date, and when they arrive, they'll text, I'm here. Mm-hmm. Instead of going to the house, knocking on the door, they'll text, I'm here, and expect her to come out. That's not okay, right? Are we clear on this? That is not okay. Meaning there has to be some. You can't be so afraid of people that you can't build up the guts to say hello, shalom aleichem. You know, I'm here to take out your daughter. I'm not an axe murderer. You know, you can see. Like, I mean, come on, it's crazy. But the it's not the same. A text is not the same as a phone call, and a phone call is not the same as a face-to-face interaction. And believe me, I use texting a lot. But nevertheless, a person can't lose that skill of how to interact with other people. The Metzora is told that he can't do that because he had abused that skill. He had taken that ability to talk to other people and he had used it l'ra. So we take that away from him, and in a way that's taking away his humanity, because that's how people really connect with each other, in a meaningful way. My brother had a close friend in Eretz Yisrael years ago. His name is Ori Feld. He lives in Baltimore. Anyone from Baltimore here? Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know him?
He's a good friend from Baltimore.
Oh, very good. So you could verify that this is true, right? He's a tremendous Balmidos, nachon? Tremendous Baal Midos. He's Rabbi Feiner's brother-in-law. Not Rabbi Marcus's brother-in-law. They're on other sides. But he used to spend a lot of time in my parents' home. He was like a ben bayis in my parents' home. And I remember that when he was a bachur, before he was married, he mentioned that he had read the book The River, the Kettle, and the Bird, before he even started dating. That was a little strange to me, because the book The River, the Kettle, and the Bird is a book written by the Rosh Yeshiva of Ner Yisrael, who at that time was not yet the Rosh Yeshiva of Ner Yisrael, and it's about dating, essentially. It's a dating book. So why would a bachur read it? And the answer is quite simple, because success in marriage can often be predicted by general success in Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. Right? Meaning, one of the questions on the Shidduch panels, what are appropriate questions to ask when you're checking out, you know, references? You want to know that the person excels in Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, ultimately, because that's going to be the determinant of success. Obviously, you need to make sure you're on the same wavelength, but that's what you'll figure out with dating. But you want to make sure that the person has a Shem Tov, and that the person interacts with others nicely. So Bein Adam L'Chaveiro will be a great predictor of success in marriage. Marriage is the most, it's not the only form of Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, but it's the most intense form of Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. Living with another person is the most intense form of Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, and the best preparation for that is to work on one's Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. The best, but not the only preparation for proper interactions with others is probably a healthy marriage. So the Metzora, who has failed so miserably in this area of Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, he's kept away from everybody initially, except for his wife. His wife, b'yemei chaluta, he's allowed to be with his wife. Because they stay together. If their marriage were working properly, he probably wouldn't have landed in his current predicament. They have some work to do. So we give them their alone time. Before he can be alone, he and his wife have to, what they call, share a drink they call loneliness, if you get the reference, right? They have to they have to be together in their loneliness. The symbolism of the aguda in this context, I think, is pretty obvious. No? What's an aguda? Not to be confused with the aguda, but what's an aguda? Right? That's why the aguda was named the aguda, because it includes all of Klal Yisrael, as they point out at every aguda convention. All of Klal Yisrael is represented here. We have Hasidim, we have super yeshivish, we have semi-super yeshivish, all of Klal Yisrael is here. So the symbolism of the aguda seems somewhat obvious in this context. Instead of separating himself, he has to bind himself to other people. But Rav Hirsch points out an amazing and deeper symbolism. He points out that the cedar and the hyssop are the tallest and shortest elements of plant life, respectively. The cedar trees are gigantic, and the hyssop, I don't know what it is, but it's very short. The red wool string is comprised of two ingredients. Wool from a beautiful, productive animal, right? A delicious animal, an animal that produces wool as well. You could use it for a lot of things, right? A wonderful animal. And dye extracted from a little creepy worm, right? The combinations that are involved in this aguda are the biggest and the littlest, are the most productive and just the least productive, most annoying. The Mitzora, who spends so much time elevating some people over others, putting down the little guy, has to come to recognize that there's value in everybody, that we're all a single aguda. There's a beautiful piece in Ali Shur where Avolbi explains that everything that's in this world is in this world for a reason, and there's something to be learned from it. That we do not believe, and Rav Lapiansky discusses this in his Sefer, Ben Torah for Life, how we do not believe in absolute rejection, except for Avodah Zarah. Avodah Zarah, we believe in absolute rejection. But everything else, we have to find the good and be able to incorporate the good, especially when it comes to other people. So Rav Lapiansky is talking about the secular world. That some people, secular world is evil. Yeah, how's that supposed to make a guy feel after he finishes yeshiva and he goes out to the secular world? For the rest of your life, you're meant to encounter evil. No, it's not evil. There's so much good. There's so many mitzvahs that can be done within that context. Right? That's the... But certainly when it comes to people, Ezu Chacham Halomid Mikol Adam. That it's not, there are some people, and you should always be suspicious of people like this, that you'll notice they're only friends with rich people. That will tell you something about a person. If they're only friends with rich people, it means that they only respect one thing. It means that their friendships are likely not real friendships. They all have an ulterior motive, right? A person who, the katan and gadol are the same to him, creates that aguda, and that's what we're trying to tell the Mitzvah. The birds, rather than goats, are taken, Because Rav Hirsch explains, birds cannot be tamed. Anyone ever had a pet bird here?
Yes.
Yeah? So they get out of their cage. It's not like, oh no, I'm a domesticated bird, so I'm going to be relaxed. No, they need a cage because they can't be tamed. They act the same way in the house as they do in the wild. Even worse, the Aruch Haner points out in Sukkot Daf Lamed that the bird is the consummate ganav. He eats whatever he can get from wherever he can. And that's the meaning of Hashem being sone gezel ba'ola. Hashem doesn't want the intestines of the bird being brought as part of the carbon, because the bird has no concern whatsoever for others' property. So in a certain sense, we bring a bird as a carbon, but we're also sending the bird away. We're sending that notion of the one who doesn't have any regard for others. We're sending it away. Maybe that even connects to the idea of Bris Mila coming in the context of Tumas Leida. Chazal tell us that a Yoledes of a Zachar is Metameh for only half the time that she is for an Akeva. Why? You know why? Why did Chazal say that a Yoledes of a Zachar is only Tameh for a week, whereas a Yoledes of a Akeva is Tameh for 2 weeks? Why is a Yoledes of a Zachar only 7 days? So Chazal tell us because there's going to come the Bris Mila, and it'll be not right if the parents can't be together at the Bris Mila. So in order to bring the child into Bris Shel Avraham Avinu, the parents need to be completely together. They need to feel that there's no barriers in their marriage. They need to feel that there's complete togetherness. Maybe the very idea that she's tamei after doing such a great thing, like having a baby, is a reflection of the reality that immediately after childbirth, the mother sort of retreats in order to recover. She needs to. She sort of has to retreat. I mean, nowadays, like, she's in the gym 24 hours later or something, but, like, it used to be that, like, childbirth was life-threatening, and Rav Shechter actually passes the Maisa. In Halacha, all the poskim assume that for 72 hours after childbirth, a woman is a chol sheish basakana, she could do whatever she feels she needs. She could be mechal Shabbos, da rice, or whatever she feels she needs. Eat on Yom Kippur. Mechuyav to eat on Yom Kippur. Mechuyav. Shulchan Aruch says to eat on Yom Kippur. Rav Shechter says, no, she's in the gym on, the treadmill, like, 36 hours later, doing Pilates or whatever. I don't think you could do Pilates on a treadmill, but whatever. You know what I'm saying? Like, she's, and you're going to say that she's a chalash yesh basakana. Okay, whatever, you hold the halacha, but it used to be that a woman would have to really retreat. So now she retreated into loneliness. That by definition is the source of tumah, the source of tara, the source of kedusha, is connecting to kedushas Yisrael. But there are two other great unifiers of Klal Yisrael. Once we've highlighted the importance of unity in the Jewish people, we need to look out for each other. Two things that are worth noting are great unifiers of Klal Yisrael, particularly in the context of the upcoming Ben Hazmanim and the upcoming Yom Tov of Pesach. First of all, Eretz Yisrael is a great unifier. Jews everywhere can look to one central location and say, that's our land, that's our place, we will protect it. You know, in the past 70 years, with all of its troubles and all of the discord that you find in Eretz Yisrael. Just listen to the way the politicians spoke about each other, in the recent election. It's a miracle on so many levels, though. None greater than the speed at which the absorption was accomplished, where Jews from every continent somehow live seamlessly as seamlessly as possible with each other. And no other country could withstand such differences of culture and background and just absorb so many, and how many times has the population doubled and tripled and quadrupled because of not just because of reproducing, the people there reproducing, but just people coming in, the Aliyah, it's just absolutely remarkable. And it's a place that creates a certain sense of achdus. It's meant to be to lay the groundwork for a certain sense of achdus of Klal Yisrael. There was a story I read last year in the Times of Israel blog of a Chayal Bodet who fought in the Yom Kippur War. His name was Jonathan. He was an American guy, fought in the Yom Kippur War. He was a lone soldier, and he had what you would call an apartment, but it wasn't even really an apartment. When he wasn't on duty, he had this place to live. It was like a decrepit room in the most awful rundown building in Yerushalayim. And he had absolutely no connection with his neighbors. They were all like 70-year-old immigrants who didn't speak English or Hebrew. They spoke whatever they spoke, and they were like, he had no common bond with anyone that was in his building. All old immigrants who couldn't communicate with, and he's a young kid from California. The people in that building were so poor that there was never lighting in the hallway because the residents would steal the light bulbs because they couldn't afford their own light bulbs. So anytime a light bulb went up in the hallway, someone would take it. Like that kind of place. And this Jonathan returns from the Yom Kippur War after being away for 2 months, and he looks and he sees that his mailbox was vandalized. You know, the mailbox at the entrance of the building where they put the mail so that everyone, right? His mailbox was vandalized. All the other mailboxes were fine. His was painted red. And he had it. He had enough already. Come on, it's one thing no one in the building is going to talk to him. So there's an old man sitting there drinking his tea with mint leaves or whatever. And he says to the old man, you know, come on, enough already. It's bad enough. I don't have any interaction with anybody in this building. You know, who's cruel enough to vandalize my mailbox while I'm going and I'm fighting for the survival of this country? Why was this necessary? Why would someone have to do this? And the old man says, no, you're misunderstanding. You weren't vandalized. You might only be alive because of this. The people in the building know nothing. We're all ignorant. We don't know anything. But we knew that you were away fighting for our country. And these aren't scholars. They don't know many prayers. They don't know how to pray for you. But they knew that when the angel of death came through Egypt, the painting of the Jewish entranceway with red served to keep the angel at bay. Your neighbors didn't know how to pray. They didn't know how to protect you. They didn't know what they could do for you. So they painted your mailbox red in the hopes of keeping the Malach HaMavis away. That's an Eretz Yisrael Dikas story. You know, that's what happens. Jews from a kid from California and a 70-year-old, Moroccan immigrant who doesn't speak English or Hebrew. You know, but we're Jews. It's a great unifier, Eretz Yisrael. But the second great unifier, of course, is our Torah. The only reason we still exist as a people, even though we haven't had a home for so many centuries, is that we always had our Torah. In our obedience to the halachos of the Torah, the mitzvos of the Torah, our interest in learning the Torah, serve many, many purposes, connect us to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, obviously connects us to the One, and therefore unify us. Because we're all unified by our connection to the Unified, the Unifier, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And you know, to take Daf Yomi, for example. Right, that's a real unifying kind of learning, because you can go anywhere in the world and someone's learning the same page of Gemara as you. But really, all learning, all Torah learning, brings us together. So when we think about the Metzora and what's so terrible about him and why we're shunning him, we need to think about how to counter that, how to create that sense of Achdus, a connection to Eretz Yisrael, a connection to our Torah. But ultimately, the point is to connect to other Jews. And if we're going to connect to other Jews, just like we mentioned before, when it comes to Shalom Bayis, certainly a great place to start is by connecting with our own families. You know, there are some people, when they look forward to a Bein Hazmanim, aren't so super duper looking forward to the idea of spending time, so much time, in such close proximity to so many relatives. You know, like as one person said to me after Pesach, I know I love my relatives. I just really don't like them. Like there's a certain challenge in that. But take a step back to appreciate how grateful we should be to be able to have a unified family, to be able to have family that comes together and spends a yontif together. Jews didn't always have this. Now, by a show of hands, how many of you are going to experience some part of yontif with a grandparent, at least a grandparent? Yeah, if I would have asked that question in a classroom, I don't know, 50 years ago, 60 years ago, no one would be raising their hand. Rav Shechter told us when he was a kid, he thought having grandparents was a Goyish thing. Like he thought his family was Goyim, because only Goyim had grandparents. He had grandparents. That was a Goyish thing. Everyone else's grandparents got killed in the Holocaust. We realize how fortunate we are. So that's something to focus on. And it takes a certain amount of preparation to like mentally prepare yourself. Like if you know there's that one younger sibling or that older sibling or cousin that's going to say that something that gets under your skin every time, right? So prepare yourself for it. Like prepare. How am I going to react when it happens in an appropriate way? And I'll tell you, as a parent, there's nothing that's more distressing to a parent, who knows, than what? Kids fighting. and siblings fighting with each other. Nothing more distressing. On a basic kibbut aveim level, prepare yourself. How am I going to make sure to get along and to increase the atmosphere of joy, the atmosphere of togetherness, the atmosphere of simcha in the house, rather than to create a sense of, I know I love my family, but I just don't like them. I have to make sure that we're the opposite of the mitzvah, that we spread this incredible sense of goodwill, and this incredible sense of togetherness and of joy. And in that way, adrava, we're not quarantined. We come together b'chabura to celebrate Pesach the way it was meant to be celebrated.